Our broadcast license from the FCC doesn't allow us to curse on the radio, but swearing is more acceptable in some workplaces and walks of life than others. You might not want to swear at your boss, but it might be less of a big deal if you drop the occasional profanity around a trusted coworker. Cursing has long been viewed as unprofessional or inappropriate, but it seems to be becoming more commonplace in other environments as social and cultural norms have changed. We're talking about swearing now with one of the world's leading experts on our so-called naughty and taboo words. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have your views or practices on swearing changed over time? Do you swear now more than you used to? Do you notice other people swearing more? Where and when? What contexts and places are appropriate, or is there no right time or place? Call in, keep it clean, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Timothy Jay is Professor Emeritus of Psychology at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts. He's the author of 6 books on cursing, language, and inappropriate behavior. He's a widely cited expert on swearing. His book titles include Why We Curse and We Did What? Timothy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, I'm darn glad to be here.
Now, what is it? You've done a lot of work on swearing and cursing. What is it about swearing that, as a psychologist, you find so interesting?
Well, it's the speakable taboo. We're not supposed to do it, but everybody knows how to swear. And children know how to swear. So it's the one kind of language you learn very early on, but you're not allowed to use it. And I think it's the taboo nature of it. It's that, you know, that the edge of proper language, and you know, like, where is that line? Where is it appropriate? What does it tell us about people and how they interact? How are cultures different? How does the brain mature to do this? There's so many questions that are interesting to me as a scientist that every time I found the answer to one question, a dozen more would pop up. That's why it's interesting to me.
Now, there's a handful of common words that might pop to mind when we think of cursing and swearing. What is it that leads a word to be promoted or demoted, however you want to think of it, to one of those words?
Well, it's all convention. These are all standards that have evolved over centuries, and they have mainly to do with religion, sexuality, relationships with ancestors, animal names, and sort of disgusting things that come out of your body. Those cover even globally the categories of words that that become taboo. And the English speaking countries, these words have been fairly stable for years. The 4-letter words, these are 1,000 years old. So these are conventions or standards that are passed on from generation to generation, and they're policed by what I call the institutions of power, like religion, education, mass media all have standards. And the fact that these institutions of power punish people or reprimand people for using these language makes them remain powerful.
We're talking to Timothy Jay, psychologist expert on swearing and taboo language. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest, your thoughts on the use of profane language. Do you see more of it than you used to? Where is it appropriate? Is it ever appropriate? What do you think? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I want to talk about context in which we use these words, Timothy. In my job on the radio, if I use certain words, I'm subjecting our station to potentially very big fines and me getting fired. If I use a profanity, say, at band practice, I might be, I don't know, building solidarity with the guys. Can you talk about the importance of context in determining when and where we say these words?
Yeah, that's the examples you gave are good. Context is the end all and the be all of using this kind of language. What a word means, how offensive it is, depends entirely on context, the who, what, where, and when. And as these variables shift, whether language is appropriate, offensive language is appropriate or not, it also shifts.
We are taking your calls at 800-642-1234 on swearing and cursing, keeping it clean, of course. And speaking of keeping it clean, we've got, you used the darn earlier, the shoot, the fudge.
Yes.
They feel a little silly sometimes. They don't seem to express exactly the same emotions. Why is that?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure that they do. These are euphemisms. So they're sort of cover words. They're used a lot by Mormons. I've worked with a study on how Mormons use these instead of the more potent four-letter words. So they kind of stand in. I think people probably they relate to or connect with the underlying obscenities with these words when they're substituted. But they allow us or the speakers who use them to vent or express emotions in a more polite way. I think that's the value of using these. That's why I said darn in the beginning. I could have said damn. That's acceptable. Yep. in media. It wasn't 100 years ago. With the power of the church 100 years ago, you couldn't say things like that on the radio or in the early film industry. So with the decline of the power of the church in America, these what are technically profanities that are religious references have lost their power. And so we find them, like the euphemisms, are used frequently now, not 100 years ago, but the OMG, we hear that. And I hear a lot of people say, oh my God. I hear more women say that than men. I hear more children say that. I don't know. I play golf and hockey. I don't hear my teammates saying, oh my God. They usually use saltier four-letter words. But I think that's the value of these euphemisms in their time and place. They're more appropriate.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Morgan is with us in Eau Claire. Morgan, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for this. It really caught my attention just because I have a five-year-old and she loves to express herself. I will, occasionally say, the four-letter swear word, but more in excitement or just more to express myself. And I've noticed just as she gets older, she'll say it kind of just more casually than maybe some people would be comfortable with. So I guess just my question was, do you feel like that is something that is okay for her to be able to express? Or I guess I'm not sure what the line is between it being appropriate or being not appropriate.
Morgan, thanks. You're talking to a guy who wrote a book called What to Do When Your Kids Talk Dirty. What would you tell her, Timothy?
Yeah, I every parent should anticipate this. By the time the kids go off to school, they probably have a vocabulary of about 40 different words that they've learned from their listening to their parents, and to their friends. They might use these kind of words more with their friends than around their parents. But I think that's a great occasion for you, Meredith, to express your family values. And I think the best thing is to remain cool. Don't overreact. That only makes the words more powerful and gives the kids the I can push mom's buttons with these words. Remain cool. Ask them about their emotions. Why are you using this word? Are you angry? You can also just say I'm angry. But I think you want to keep the door open as a mother to talk about not only words, but also what's going to happen in a few years is the sexual terms will come in. And you don't want to be repressive about that. You want to be, if you want to communicate your values about religion or sexuality, I think that's your role as a parent. So anticipate it, be cool about it, but if you have rules about this, then if the kid breaks the rule, then there are consequences. So I think it's an integral part of parenting. But what surprised me in the psychological literature, especially developmental psychology, there was no mention of this in the in scientific literature. That's why one of the reasons why I wrote the book, What to Do When Your Kids Talk Dirty, is every parent knows this is important. And also, besides the four-letter words, it's like, how do I talk about my body? How do I talk about the things that come out of my body? You know, how does my family talk about these things? So take that as a role as a parent and as an educator to teach values to your daughter.
Thanks a lot for sharing that story. We're talking to psychologist Timothy Jay with the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts about cursing and the cultural norms around naughty words. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about swearing? Do you think people should let loose and say what they want? When, where, what environment is the right time to swear, if any? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, hear from some more of you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Timothy Jay, Professor Emeritus of Psychology at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts, author of many books on the subject of cursing and swearing. He's with us today to talk about why we swear, how different social environments affect the language we use. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Bob is with us in the Beloit area. Bob, hello.
Why, hello. So I just wanted to bring this up. My mom is going to be 101 in March, still living at home, and she started a cussing club probably when she was in her 80s. And her theory behind it was to bring all the friends and people over. They could come in, they could cuss, they could get everything out of their system. And she kind of thought that people, when they got older with dementia, then wouldn't be doing that as much because they felt free to get that out at this point. I just thought that was a interesting vision, and there's no scientific evidence behind it, obviously, but I'm curious about what your speaker's thoughts are on that.
Well, and Bob, I gotta ask, have you been to one of these, or were you not invited as you know, a kid, not
no,
one
I
of
was,
the peers?
I was not invited. This was something my mom did with her a bunch of her lady friends, and primarily started because one of her friends was getting dementia and was starting to cuss and use some languages. And this made her feel more comfortable bringing her in and doing social functions when everybody could come in and just
Bob,
have at it.
That is super interesting. Thanks for sharing that. Timothy, I'm gonna guess there may not be a lot of research on this, but what do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I think it's also part of what we're seeing now, more women swearing generally as more women are in the workplace, more women in public. Sort of a more empowerment of women to use this, what I would call powerful language. Certainly, if you're going to work in a high pressure context like a law firm, the women in the law firm are going to pick this up. But with regard to aging, although I can never imagine my mother doing this, I was raised in a very religious family. I never heard my mother swear, although my father was a bricklayer, and I heard him swear, especially at work. But we have studied cursing in nursing homes, and what he reported is happening. What is happening is there in a nursing home, you have sort of, with dementia, you have a reversion to childhood, the people with dementia become very childlike. They're not as careful about their bath habits, and they revert to the emotional language of childhood. If the person is bilingual, they usually will revert to swearing in their native language. But this is common in nursing home settings, especially in the dementia wings. And where you will see them using the language of their childhood. So what we recorded about 20 years ago in the nursing homes was we didn't have the offensive language that teenagers use now. It was mainly profanity, words like Jesus, damn, goddamn, words like that. It will be interesting to see when the younger generation reaches the nursing home and has dementia, I would imagine the kind of language we'll hear in another 40 or 50 years is going to be a lot worse now. But the use of profanity during dementia is common, along with a lot other sort of childlike behavior.
Bob, thanks for sharing that story. Tom is with us now in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi. I have a question for your guest. I'm under the impression that a lot of swear words covering taboo subjects, that the culture, whatever the culture it is that's using those words, they tend to borrow the words from other cultures. For one's own culture, it's demeaning to use words to cover perhaps sexual subjects, and so you borrow words from other cultures.
Tom, interesting. Thanks. Timothy, is that something that we happen? We use loan words for some of these ideas?
Well, I think of the lexicon of swearing like a garden. And there are some plants in there that are ancient, and like the F word and the S word. Those words have been around for 1,000. They grew up in Anglo-Saxon culture, but also influenced by German and Italian. So there is some borrowing. Where I see that obviously today is the expansion of hip hop culture around the world, globally, where you have people that are saying American swear words that they pick up in hip hop from music and other genres of hip hop. And they, you know, it's common to hear this in Sweden or Germany or Switzerland, to hear swear words being appropriated. This is happening now more than ever because of the global expansion of entertainment media and film and music, but also the internet. But again, if you get a new word, a new plant, an exotic in your garden, and it doesn't resonate with the speakers of that culture, then it will disappear. And that's very common for slang, for slang terms. I can think of the slang of the 60s when I was growing up. Nobody would use that kind of language now. But we're now having cross-cultural conferences on offensive language, which would have never happened 50 years ago.
Tom, thanks a lot for bringing that up. Interesting point. Talking to Timothy Jay, psychologist, expert on swearing. Back to your calls. Adam was with us in River Falls. Hi, Adam.
Hi. Yeah, interesting topic. Growing up on a farm, there was lots of cursing down in the barn when things did not go well, but my mom made sure we did not use those words in the house. So my question is, how much control do we have over these words? And as I'm raising little boys now, and you mentioned kids earlier on, are there any tactics in helping make sure that those words don't come up or aren't used as much as they can be?
Well, I think on that last note, I think you should expect them to come up. Every competent speaker of English knows all these swear words. I think what you need to engage them is in a discussion of etiquette. Language has styles, like clothing has styles, and where you learn where it's appropriate and where it's not appropriate. I had the same kind of division of labor in my house where what happened at work was different than what happened at the dinner table. And I think by the time boys are adolescents, they need to learn that what you can say in the backyard, what you can say in the barn is different than what you can say at work or at school. That's just part of, you know, learning your culture. But expect them to learn this. And also problematic is, you know, talking about sexuality with your parents is also difficult. So, I think I would anticipate this. I've worked in dozens of different contexts. I worked in a factory. I worked with my father, who was a bricklayer. And the language shifted in all these places. When I, as a professor for 40 years, I rarely used this language in the classroom unless I was angry. And I think that's, again, like raising your children is helping them learn to express their emotions. And I think sometimes, like when things go wrong anywhere in the barn or on the golf course or at work, and we become frustrated, it seemed to be there's sort of a natural reflexive use of this, like the hammer on the thumb idea. So that kind of stuff, I think, is a habit which is kind of drilled into you, or that you've practiced enough that it becomes almost automatic. Whereas other times, I think answering the question about control is a matter of, should I use this kind of language or tell this kind of joke in this situation? And there's where you, where it's not like the hammer on the thumb. It's more like what I call strategic use of this. Like, that's not a good idea to say that here, or maybe I should say that here because I'm angry.
Adam, thanks for that call. And Timothy, thanks again for joining us today.
As I said, I'm darn glad to be here and tell your listeners to support public radio. I do.
Thank you so much. That's Timothy Jay, Professor Emeritus of Psychology at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts, author of a number of books on cursing, language, and inappropriate behavior. He's with us today to talk about why people curse and swear and how the cultural norms around those taboo words can change over time.